And good morning, 9 o'clock on your community radio station, KBOO Portland, the Mighty Boo, with a busy Thursday morning coming up in about a half hour. Join us at 9:30 for Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering interviews Gideon Levy, controversial writer for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, about what Israeli Jews call the Temple Mount. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints presents Giants of Journalism, a 1997 recording of reporters Gary Webb, Robert Perry, and Pete Bruton talking about the dangers and the pitfalls of recording on covert actions by U.S. intelligence agencies. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Ken Jones speaks with science fiction author, activist, and blogger Cory Doctorow about information doesn't want to be free, art, copyright, and the internet. And at 11:45, join us as Sarika Mehta interviews John Oliver, award-winning writer and satirist. That is all coming up this morning. Up next, it's Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around. That is next on KBOO.
This song could go on without any end till you realize that your car is not your friend. We're all car addicts. Let's just say no. Then those cars will have to go.
Help support KBOO Community Radio by donating your used car, truck, motorcycle, boat, or any other vehicle. We'll transform that old machine into resources for unserved and underserved communities, free training, recording equipment, and great programming for the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world. For more information, call 1-877-526-6123. That's 877-KBOO-123. Or go to kboo.fm/vehicle.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Triangle Productions run of Five Lesbians Eating Quiche, starting November 28th and ending on December 20th at The Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. This is a comedic look at the window of 1956's Susan B. Anthony Society for the Sisters of Gertrude Stein, as they sit in their renovated community center, sharing secrets as the threat of atomic apocalypse nibbles at their heels. Again, that's the Triangle Productions performance of Five Lesbians Eating Quiche at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
and a left opinion program on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'll try it again. This is Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, the first thing I'd like to talk about is Measure 92, which is still not over, incredibly. Latest information is that the vote count is still narrowing. I posted some questions to the Facebook site at Multnomah County Elections. I posted the questions, why have the Measure 92 results not changed since Friday? That's a little old information, actually, and they did change a bit, and the latest information is available on the Aura Star. It's, I believe I have that number, it's 4,100-something is the spread statewide. I asked how many, I said, I know that people are coming in to re-vote challenged ballots. Why are there so many challenges to Portland voters over their signatures? Has anyone been charged with ballot fraud? Who challenged so many signatures? And when I was asking those questions, I wish that I'd been a bit more specific and that I had said, because I want people to understand, when I say over the signatures, I mean that signatures have been challenged for not matching. And I'll have a little more to say about that, but Multnomah County Elections answered me to November 18th at 2:01 p.m., and they said, thanks for your comments. Additional results will be available by 11:21. The process of counting the remaining ballots in every election takes time. The remaining ballots to count include ballots that came from other counties, ballots that were not readable by the ballot counting machine, and the challenge ballots that are being resolved. Each ballot must be processed before it can be counted. Election results are not official until final certification, which occurs no later than 20 days after the election. Only election officials challenge ballots where the signature does not match or there is no signature on the ballot return envelope. The Secretary of State's office investigates any issues of voter fraud. There are currently only about 1,800 remaining challenge ballots in Multnomah County, down significantly since Election Day, when there were over 3,500 challenges. 4 years ago, in the 2010 November general election, there were over 3,400 remaining challenges, so the number this year is much lower. Now, if you're wondering what this is all about, I have been complaining that I do not feel that the situation is particularly canny with signature challenges in the state of Oregon, and particularly in Multnomah County. And the reason I say that is because Multnomah County is a reservoir of liberal and left votes, and I find it, well, less than credible that thousands of Multnomah County voters don't know how to sign their ballots. Because the question is not whether they signed the ballots. If you look at the list of ballots that have been challenged statewide, you will find that the majority of them are from Portland. And the majority of them are for signatures that do not match. So I've had some questions about that. And in response to the response from Multnomah County, I wrote, that does not explain why thousands of Portland voters were rejected for mismatched signatures. In fact, given that corporate interests have a long history of dirty tricks in this nation, it is quite possible that someone in Multnomah County elections threw out ballots in order to throw the election. I call for an investigation. I still want to know who was responsible for rejecting thousands of signatures. Now, I went into the ballot office and day before yesterday, Tuesday, and I observed that people were coming in, and I talked to Eric at Multnomah County Elections, and here is the product of that conversation.
So you're interested in the signature challenge process. Can you tell me anything about that? And you are
I'm Eric.
Eric.
Yeah. So what are you interested in?
Well, I'm interested that so many signatures were challenged. I'm wondering, is it a matter of opinion? Is there a machine process by which the ballots were...
Actually, the number of challenges is not that high. There's only about 1,800 remaining. 4 years ago, there were about 3,500 that were not resolved. So the cure rate has been very good.
The cure rate?
The number of challenge ballots that have been resolved.
I understand that if the ballots are not resolved, then the voter is then kicked off the list, right?
No. So if the signature doesn't match, then the voter is inactivated, and that's stated in the letter that they receive. If there's no signature on it, nothing happens.
Well, that's not what I mean. The voter would then be kicked off the registered list for the next election, right? No?
No. As I was stating, if the signature doesn't match, the voter is inactivated, so they would then have to update their registration if they wanted to get an additional ballot for the next election. But those are just the signatures not matching.
Okay, well, can you tell me who determines whether a signature does not match, and what is the process?
Election officials do.
Election officials.
Every envelope is physically looked at. Mm. The signature is compared to the voter registration signature.
Visually, so that's a matter of opinion whether it matches.
Well, it's election officials who are trained and have gone through a signature verification process that the Secretary of State puts forward. So it's,
are they volunteers?
No, they're all paid staff.
Okay. So with all of these, with so many non-matching signatures, I wonder if anyone has been charged with fraud, with voting fraudulently.
How can I help you?
By forging a signature.
Well, the Secretary of State investigates any issues of fraud. And that's a process they handle. So if you wanted to find out, that process is obviously takes time to investigate anything. There have been in past elections, there was a gentleman who was voting his dead brother's ballot, as well as collecting Social Security. That was, I think, out of Marion County.
So, but really not a significant number of people, and no one charged so far this election, right?
Again, the Secretary of State handles that, so you'd have to check with them to find out.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for answering those
questions. Yeah, no problem at all. Yeah, you're welcome. You have a good day. Okay.
All right, that was me talking with Eric at the Multnomah County Elections Office. And I found that conversation a little infuriating because, as you may have noticed, the questions were answered in a way that was, somewhat evasive, in my opinion. Are you kicked off the voter list if your signature is not matched and you do not respond? No, you're just kicked off the voter list if your signature does not match and you do not respond. Kicked off is a phrase that he is rejecting, but if you can't vote, then in my parlance, you've been kicked off the voter list. And the reason that I'm bringing all this up is because there is a nationwide context of election throwing. And certainly I've gotten most of this, most of my ideas on this from, although not all of them, from Greg Palast. And gregpalast.com is a good source of information for tactics for throwing elections. For example, on gregpalast.com, if you pull it up, you'll see that part of what he writes on the website is, no question Republicans trounce Democrats in the midterm elections, but if not for the boost of the cross-check voter roll purge system used in 23 Republican-controlled states, the GOP could not have taken the U.S. Senate. It took the Palast investigations team 6 months, he writes, to get our hands on the raw files, fighting against every official trick to keep them hidden. Here's what we found. Interstate cross-check is a computer system that officials claim can identify anyone who commits the crime of voting twice in the same election in two different states. While the current list of 7 million suspects did not yield a single conviction for double voting, and departing from what Palast writes there, that's the sort of angle I was taking with the election official there. If there are so many bad signatures, then someone must be getting prosecuted for an attempt to fool the elections process by voting for someone else, right? No, that's not happening because that's not what it's about. But returning to what Palast wrote, cross-check did provide the grounds for removing the registration for tens of thousands of voters in battleground states. The purge proved decisive in North Carolina, Colorado, Kansas, and elsewhere. Without cross-check, the computer program he was writing about there, the GOP could not have taken control of the U.S. Senate. In North Carolina, he writes, Republican Tom Tillis upset incumbent Senator Kay Hagan by just 48,511 votes. North Carolina's cross-check purge targeted a stunning 589,393 voters. In Colorado, Cory Gardner, the Republican, defeated Mark Udall by just 49,729 votes. Colorado's cross-check potential double voter list totals 300,842. He writes, the cross-check purge list also swamped GOP Senate margins in Alaska and Georgia and likely provided the victory margins for GOP gubernatorial victories in Kansas and Massachusetts. Greg Palast writes, no states do not purge every name on the list. Typical is Virginia, which proudly purged 64,581 duplicates from its voter rolls in 2013, equal to about 19% of its cross-check list. Here he has the word duplicates in quotation marks. And Greg Palast writes, other states refuse to provide numbers, but their scrub methods are the same or even more aggressive than Virginia's. We can conservatively calculate that the purge of 19% of the cross-check list accounted for at least three GOP Senate victories and thereby control of the Senate. If the cross-check list truly identified fraudulent double voters, then we'd have to concede that the election results are legit. But the ugly truth is the lists are nothing more than racially loaded lists of common names. And there's more information on that on gregpalast.com. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I believe what we are experiencing here in Oregon is a similar voter purge technique, only here instead of using the, I don't know whether they're using a cross-check list. Here, I believe that there are probably shills in the election system, probably unknown to Eric, who I was talking to, probably unknown to the Secretary of State, who are actually working for True the Vote, or a similar Rove-connected vote-throwing system. And these people have gotten their, and they probably have been there for years. And since they are there, and since they do purge as many Multnomah County voters as they can using this technique of claiming that your signature isn't your signature, they can throw elections pretty consistently wherever the margin is close enough, wherever a few thousand votes will make a difference. Multnomah County can get shaved down just enough to throw the election. And that is a very serious allegation that I'm making, and I am calling now publicly. Hello there, I'm Teresa Mitchell. I'm speaking for myself, but I am calling for a statewide investigation of election throwing techniques, election fraud, and That's how it's being done, in my opinion. And again, the reason I say that is because I've actually looked at the list, and demographically speaking, the majority of the votes that have been challenged weren't missing a signature. They had a signature that did not match. Again, were this actually the case, one might expect some prosecutions for fraudulent voting. But fraudulent voting is not occurring. Fraudulent vote counting is occurring and will continue until this is confronted, investigated, and these people are identified, charged with the crime that they are committing, and removed from election officialdom. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. And as I was saying, Measure 92 is still a few thousand votes away from victory, and the margin is closing. This is something that has been kept out. This is news that you're not supposed to know. This has been kept out of the Oregonian. There's been very, very little press on this. If you you can verify that for yourself by using a news search engine and putting in the term Oregon Measure 92. In other news, Brandon Duncan, a musician in San Diego, is being charged with a crime for publishing a CD that the district attorney finds offensive. Yep, Brandon Duncan, a musician in San Diego, is being charged with a crime for publishing a CD, a music CD, that the district attorney finds offensive. Quoting the Sydney Morning Herald, an Australian newspaper, we're not just talking about a CD of anything, of love songs, we're talking about a CD cover depicting a revolver with bullets, quoting Deputy District Attorney Anthony Campagna. Incredibly, American television station ABC Channel 10, which reported the case, estimated one in three crimes in San Diego was gang-related. Brian Watkins, Duncan's attorney, called the charges shocking. Quote, he has no criminal record. Nothing in his lyrics say go out and commit a crime. Nothing in his lyrics reference shootings, yet they are holding him liable for conspiracy. There are huge constitutional issues, end quote. Freedom of speech could be used as a defense, you think, according to Thomas Jefferson School of Law professor Alex Kreit, who suggested the case could open a can of worms. Where does that end if it's the definition of criminal liability, he asks. Quoting, is Martin Scorsese going to be prosecuted if he meets with mafia members for his next film? End quote. Oh, here's some more quote from Thomas Kreit of the Jefferson School of Law. The Constitution says it can't be a crime simply to make gangster rap songs and hang out with people that are committing crimes. You have to have more involvement than that, end quote. The hearing resumes on Monday, but the case has already attracted criticism on social media, including that it is racially motivated and targets black men. And there's more on that at the Sydney Morning Herald. If it's news in the U.S., you'll find it in Australian media. We don't have time for the First Amendment because, oh God, gangs, gangs, black people, scary. We can't afford to have free speech. Thanks to Ani for pointing out that story. Dateline Managua from Radio Havana, Cuba. The number of chikungunya cases in Nicaragua has risen to 1,021. According to Rosario Murillo, coordinator of the Communications and Citizenship Council, there have been a decrease in the number of patients registered each day since 21 were diagnosed with the illness in Managua on Tuesday, she stated. And Rosario Murillo added that medical personnel are in constant contact and need to develop an effective work that allows health authorities to face this type of disease. Chikungunya is a mosquito-borne disease that causes high fever, headaches, and joint pain, which can become chronic and develop into disabilities. That's the end of the Radio Havana, Cuba article. But from other things I've read about the disease, apparently this can cripple you. In related news, Outbreak News Today reported, quote, travel-associated chikungunya cases continue to be seen weekly in Florida. During the past week, 17 cases of chikungunya fever were reported in persons that had international travel. This brings the total imported cases in 2014 in the U.S. and Florida to 350. Earlier in the year, the majority of travel-associated chikungunya cases were due to travel to Haiti and the Dominican Republic. However, increasing numbers of travelers with chikungunya being diagnosed in Florida have been from Puerto Rico, and Jamaica. You're listening to Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is KBOO Portland. And Lauren McCauley writes in CommonDreams.org, hundreds of Walmart workers and street vendors protested outside the corporation's headquarters in Gurgaon, India, calling out one of the world's richest families for perpetuating global inequality while reaping the benefits. Walmart workers in more than 10 different countries are uniting on Wednesday in a global day of action for decent wages and respect at work, with coordinated demonstrations planned in Mexico, Canada, Brazil, Argentina, Chile, South Africa, the United Kingdom, India, Zambia, Hong Kong, and the United States. Workers and allies are teaming up with international trade union UNI Global Union to expose Walmart's bad labor practices through their stores, warehouses, and global supply chain. Quoting an unnamed supply chain worker in a press statement, I'm working hard to build the profits of the richest family on the globe while putting my safety at risk just to go to work. The Waltons need to see and hear what they are doing to families around the globe. It's shameful, end quote. The demonstrators are calling on the Walton family, which own over 50% share of Walmart and are estimated to be worth a combined total of $152 billion, to publicly commit to paying the company's 2.2 million retail workers and countless more supply chain employees a living wage. Workers and allies are sharing images from the Global Day of Action on Twitter under the hashtag Walmart Global. Alistair Fotheringham writes in The Independent, as Spanish unemployment reaches another record high, residents of rural Marinaleda could be forgiven for feeling a little smug. In the small village in deepest Andalusia, the joblessness remains firmly and almost certainly uniquely within Spain at zero. With one set of traffic lights, two bars, and one central avenue lined with low terraced houses, Marinaleda looks like many villages in western Andalusia, but huge wall murals depicting the destruction of tanks and weaponry, the trashing of Nazi symbols, and a column of workers marching through the fields are far from the usual graffiti found in such places, nor do many villages name their sports hall after Che Guevara or have oversized placards of doves of peace dotted on streets named after left-wing heroes such as Salvador Allende and Pablo Neruda. Maria Leda is run along the lines of a communist utopia and boasts collectivized lands which offer every villager the opportunity to work the fields tending to root crops and olive groves. In Andalusia, where jobs are currently being lost at the rate of 500 a day, any work is good work. Marina Leda's mayor, Mr. Juan Manuel Sanchez Gordillo, has gained national notoriety and has even been dubbed the Robin Hood of Spain after he and a group of laborers refused to pay a supermarket for 10 shopping trolleys filled with food, which they then distributed to the area's food banks, sparking headlines in countries as far away as Iran. Sanchez Gordillo says that was to draw attention to the fact that there are so many people in Spain who are having a hard time getting enough to eat right now. We wanted to say in the 21st century in Spain, this problem exists. Gandhi would have supported it, end quote. But the supermarket raids were just the tip of the iceberg for Mr. Sanchez Gordillo, who has spent more than 30 years fighting for wealth redistribution via land occupations, cheap housing, and cooperatives. In Marina Leda, he has promoted equal wages policies, scrapped the police force, and offered mortgages on previously state-owned properties, which cannot be sold for profit, of just 15 euros a month. When asked about the gulf between Spain's 27.2 unemployment rate and full employment in Marina Leda, the 57-year-old former history teacher and father of three who works unpaid as the mayor says, "It fills me with hope and desperation, both at the same time." I mentioned Marina Leda. There's more to that article at The Independent. Because I think here in the U.S. we've forgotten that our society is for our betterment. Our society is for life getting better and life getting fuller. And what we've instead gotten used to is a society that is for the enrichment of the billionaires and where the basic human rights of free education, housing, full employment are regarded as things that should properly be denied people so that they will be motivated. This is a poisonous ideology. It has failed. We find people in the coldest weather sleeping on the sidewalks because of this failed ideology of United States capitalism. It stinks. It doesn't work. And we must replace it. And we're not going to be able to replace it through the voting system alone. We're going to have to push and shove and take to the streets and whatever else it takes, whatever means is necessary, to have a revolution in the United States. You've been listening to Press Watch. Stay tuned. Parafogging is coming up and more of the incomparable Radio Z on KBOO Portland. Going out to you via the terrestrial transmitter at 90.7 FM and other frequencies in other parts of the state and in Washington. Hello, Washington. And via the World Wide Web to you and to all the ships at sea.
You can make sure KBOO Community Radio continues to inform and entertain Portland and the world for years to come by designating KBOO as a beneficiary in your will. Thank you for thinking about KBOO and the future of independent, community-supported media. For more information, contact Monica Beamer at 503-231-8032 or email monica@kboo.org.
Join KBOO at the Clinton Street Theater for our monthly movie screening night. This month, KBOO proudly presents Alice's Restaurant, the film based on a song based on Arlo Guthrie's 1965 Thanksgiving Day. Alice's Restaurant will screen Wednesday, November 26th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information about the film at KBOO at the Clinton series can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under the community events.
You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
Thank you.